kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Hiccups and cats pissing everywhere. Always fun. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Early week episode, you know what everyone's here for, and that's reviews. And we're going to kick things off with our friend Cole Martin joining the show. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Thank you. How are you? It's better than... So, you know, you take it.
I've had horrible heartburn for a few days. Wrestling's paused because I have to do this. I've been sleeping terribly. My cat just pissed on the floor. It's one of those days.
I apologize.
And then the chronic back pain, which never goes away.
Yeah, I feel you there.
And plus, worst of all, SGDQ is done.
I saw that, and I've seen other people complaining. I watched a lot more of it than I ever have before.
I tried to watch as much as I could, but I'm not, like, 20 anymore, and my body can't stay up that long.
I kind of feel bad when you watch it, and they're, like, just utterly breaking the game in horrible ways. Because you know that the developers have got to be embarrassed. And they're like, you know, hey, my game was on, you know, Games Done Quick, and they broke it horribly. they're just putting, it's like airing all your dirty laundry out in the front yard. So I feel a little bad when I watch the ones where they glitch it. But
did you see any good runs? Anything that you remember?
The guy that did the runs, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Mm.
That was pretty impressive.
I did not get to see that one yet. I want to.
Yeah.
I have a thread open of like all the VODs, and I just want to go back and watch a bunch of these. I thought the Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past was probably the funniest one I saw the whole time. The guys on the couch were just laughing my ass off the whole time. I was told that the Final Fantasy VII run was amazing. And given the fact that it's nearly 8 hours long, like, they said it was entertaining the entire way through.
I hope they, like, took breaks to stretch their legs and stuff. You don't want anybody getting a blood clot over speedrunning a game.
I'm sure they're fine. No one died
yet. That's the mom in me coming out. Don't get a blood clot.
Now listen, kids. You have to stand up and get some exercise.
Vitamin D deficiency because he did an 8-hour speed run.
There was a clip floating around of when Sephiroth kills Aeris. Oh, spoiler, sorry if you haven't played that 20-year-old game yet. As soon as the sword goes through, you just hear someone off camera yell, "Why?" It was incredible.
Nice. Man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I missed it, and then I don't know where I'd ever find the 8 hours to catch it either.
I might have to find the time to watch. It was just. And then there was a new game called Splasher, I think was the name of it. I never heard of it before. GDQ was the first time I ever saw it. It's like a mix between like Da Blob, where you have to spray things with ink, and Super Meat Boy, in that it's ridiculously tough 2D platforming. And it was such a trip to watch. It was like a 5 a.m. stream where it was just the guy, his couch, the guys who were going to join him, who's like, yeah, they're probably up too late. It's okay. I'll do this myself. I think he was French, and, he clearly could speak English, but he was more focused on trying to get through the game.
Yeah.
It was just, he was so cool, so collected, and it was such an awesome game.
You gotta admit, when you watch those speedrunners and they're just, like, completely unfazed by everything that's happening in the game, and if we were to play that shit, we'd be sitting there, like, breaking controllers and...
Fuck this game. Fuck this.
We'd have it on super mega easy crybaby mode. We'd still just put the controller down and walk away and be like, forget it. Fuck. No. Not today.
I'm too old for anything above, normal.
Yeah. No, I don't even put shit on normal if I don't have to for an achievement. Give me the easiest mode humanly possible because I'm old and cranky at this point. I just want to get through it. Same. I enjoy it, but I want to get through it.
Same here. Oh, man, we're getting old.
I think we're past the point of getting. We just are.
Speaking of being old, there's a whole bunch of games that you and I get to talk about today that are straight from the days of our youth.
Indeed.
We're going to kick things off.
I think I remember some of them from my childhood, actually.
I remember a bunch of them in certain ways as opposed to others. But the first game that we're going to talk about is called Micro Machines World Series, developed and published by Codemasters. It released June 30th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $29.99. The legend is back. Micro Machines World Series combines the thrilling madness of racing micro vehicles with epic team battle strategies set against the extraordinary interactive backdrops of the everyday home. Grab your Nerf blaster, try to avoid the jam, and take on the world. You put some time into this, correct?
I did a little bit. Not an overwhelmingly exciting amount. I need to play it some more, and I'm going to play it some more, but I played it, yeah.
I think I've been putting a big chunk of time into this. I've played online quite a bit. I was playing with Memories of Final. I'm sure some of our listeners know who he is. We were playing together for quite a bit. I was shocked about two things. One, how fun this is online, and two, how non-existent the single player is.
Yeah. You can play against bots, but that's about it.
I mean, they do have limited local options. Like, I thought there was going to be some kind of, like, Grand Prix or campaign or, like, something single player to it. The whole time that I've been seeing the trailers and everything else, I don't know if I was missing, like, all the signs that, hey, this is a heavily, heavily online-focused game. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of shocked when I started up the game. I did the tutorial, and then it's like, quick match. And I went to it, and it's like, looking for games. I'm like, no, I just want, like, a local quick match. Like,
I don't want to get wrecked online just yet. Calm down. But, like, yeah,
where's the story? Where's the Grand Prix? And I was kind of surprised. I wasn't expecting that.
I gotta say, though, we get so few online games through, you know, indie developers and stuff, and the smaller groups, that it's at least, even without a single player, at least it did push the boundaries and have multiplayer. Because...
And there was the possibility of a lot of people, too.
Yeah, that's true. And when I was playing, unfortunately, I just kept getting bots.
Yeah, I ran into the same issue, even with Final, and it seemed like if we would do the battle modes, where team versus team, it would be me, him, maybe one other person, and then a bunch of bots against, like, two or three humans and a bunch of bots. And I don't know if the player count is just that low right now, or I'm kind of worried this is going to turn into Deformers.
Exactly. Because when I played, it was only bots. I never saw another human player. And I was like, well, all right then. You know, it's hard to be like, oh my god, you should play this game. It's fun. There's nobody else to play against.
I'm legitimately worried that there's... I don't know if there's just a really small player base for this right now. It is a fairly new release. I know some of the times I was playing it was pre-release with Memories of Final. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that that was part of it. I'm just... It was the same issue with Deformers where it was all online and no one was there.
The other issue you've got to worry about too, like you said, you guys were playing it pre-release and a little after release. That's that phase two where you're going to be running into other reviewers. And then you got to worry about, okay, when the reviewers move on to next week's games, that's a pretty big exodus of the player base. You know, now what?
Yeah.
Is it going to justify, is that player base going to be there to justify saying, oh, this game's so fun?
I will say, if they were other reviewers, I was whipping their asses online.
Yeah, I was doing really bad. It was a good thing I was playing against bots, because then, like, nobody was streaming it or anything to show how bad I was playing. Because I was genuinely struggling. I don't do top-down racing well at all. And I'm like, wee, I'm driving backwards. And off the elimination, like, it was like, go! And I was like, phew, right off the thing. And I was like, okay, well, fuck. I had to sit and wait for the bots to go through overtime and elimination when I was by myself.
I have noticed that the bots in the game are pretty brutal in some of the
moments. They are. They will hunt you down.
I was shocked at how difficult it was. Like, the first time I played, because I did some offline bot races before jumping online just to get the hang of the controls. My first race, I was in third.
Yeah,
out of four.
I took an ace.
I was third out of four. Like, what the hell? It took me a few races before I got a win. I was proud of the one online race, because even on the final lap, I wrecked like twice on the final lap because like a helicopter dropped a bomb on me, or I flew off the course, and I still won by like 5 seconds. So I don't know who I was playing in that one, but I wrecked them all. You mentioned top-down racing. We should probably talk about the actual game itself and not just the population.
Yeah.
if you were a fan of the old-school Micro Machines games or like RC Pro-Am, very similar in style where it's the top-down racing view. You have basically tank controls where left goes left and right goes right no matter where you're positioned. Mm-hmm. So you got to remember that you're pretty much controlling like an RC car, and it's not, you know, direction is based on the controller, not where your vehicle is on screen.
Yeah.
So I know some people have trouble with that one, but I don't know. I never really had a problem with that. I think the course designs are awesome. They're beautifully created. A lot of attention to detail. Creative. Yeah.
Like, you're playing it and you're just like, oh my gosh, they thought of that, you know? It's really, it's just neat.
I know we had Super Toy Cars on the Xbox One quite a while ago. This feels like Super Toy Cars with the overhead style and just a shitload more detail. Like, there's a lot of love and care that went into the design mm-hmm. of these levels. From, you know, a kitchen table where you could run over jam and it leaves trails on the tablecloth still.
You push the Cheerios around when you go past them. My mom, I recognize this scenery.
Yeah, it's really well done. Really well created game. As in terms of the online modes, there are a lot of modes there. They have standard racing. They have elimination style racing where the last person there wins, and if you fall off the screen you lose. They have a handful of different battle modes, whether it's like just free for all, blow each other up, capture the flags, King of the Hill style mode. Like, there's a ton of modes online. So if you're getting this and you're planning on playing online, there's tons there to do, as long as you mm-hmm. can find people to do it with. If you're looking for something for, like, you know, kill time at home by yourself, this is a tough one to sell on.
Yeah. I do want to back up, though, to where you were talking about the attention to detail. one other thing that I was really happy to see, and it's going to seem silly to a lot of people, I'm sure, but as you progress, you unlock the titles and stuff. You get the little loot crates, and they pop open, and there's titles. Generally, when there's a game like this, especially something pertaining to cars, and it's going to have those titles, and they're going to be male-centric. You know, Papa Bear or Big Daddy or something like that. When I played and I unlocked my first crate, it popped up with one of the titles, and I was surprised because it was gender specific and it was for a female.
Ooh, interesting.
It actually popped up and said Desktop Diva. And I thought, that's a fluke. That's like it just one out of 100 is aimed at females. And the next time, played another race, popped another one, and it popped up Mama Bear. And I was like, these are all gender specific, and they are tailored to what you have your gender set as.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was very neat. And I was quite happy to see that because that's extremely rare. But it's a nice little attention to
detail. Indeed. For the people who might be freaking out at the words loot boxes in this game, there are no in-game microtransactions. All the loot and all the crates and everything, you earn them as you level up in the game, and there is no way to buy them with real money. So don't worry. It is all done in-game. I know a lot of people...
they hear the loot crate name, and freak out. My pennies.
They become addicts. But yeah, personally, for $30, I think I wish this had some kind of campaign. It's as much fun as I am having with this game, I cannot give it a buy it just because of the lack of any kind of meaningful solo experience and the lack of any kind of player base right now. I really hope the game grows because, similar to Deformers, what's there is really, really fun.
I'd like to see it have a free weekend or something to try to.
Yeah, there's just no one there to have fun with yet. You know, you'll find a couple of people littered here and there, but hopefully our giveaway that we're doing might help out get someone new on there. So. Yeah, what do you think for $30?
I give it a solid try, and I hope people do try it. I don't know if there's a free trial of it.
I don't think there is.
If not, there should be, at least eventually. And a free weekend would probably do wonders for it, because it is a lot of fun. Top-down is not my favorite thing in the world, top-down racing, and I still, at least I could manage eventually. So, and I enjoyed it, even going against bots by myself.
Good times. Well, anyway, we do have more games to talk about. More games of our youth, not just Micro Machines, but next game to talk about is called ACA Neo Geo Metal Slug 2. Yes, we have finally heard back from Hamster, and we're going to give you a couple more Neo Geo games to talk about. Metal Slug 2 console version, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. It released June 1st on Xbox One and PS4 for $7.99. It just released July 6th on the Nintendo Switch. Metal Slug 2 is an action game released by SNK in 1998. Players can choose from Marco, Tarma, Eri, and... God, these names. Theo? Like, my vision is, like, so blurry from watching GDQ all week the way it is. with the aim of defeating the rebel army is plotting a coup once again. In addition to heavy machine guns and shotguns from the previous games, new weapons such as laser guns have been added for even more battle variations. Cole, what did you think of Metal Slug 2?
I had a surprising amount of fun with this game. I swear I remember the Metal Slug series from being a kid. I don't know if I'm legitimately remembering it, or
See, I'm
if,
not
like,
the
I'm
only one who can't talk today.
Oh, blah, blah, blah. It's every day with me. But, like, I don't know if I'm actually, like, remembering it, or if it's just, like, triggering memories of playing games like it. Either way, the trip down memory lane is enjoyable. It plays incredibly smoothly, despite being, you know, ported to the Xbox One and being almost, oh God, is it almost 30 years old? It's almost 30. Okay.
No, it's almost 20.
88? 98. Okay, yeah. 20 years old. Okay, whew. I swore it's okay. I thought you said
deep breath.
88.
Nope, 98.
That doesn't make it any better. It's not any better. I graduated high school. It plays incredibly well. It plays incredibly smooth. The shooting action, you know, you use your left stick for movement and also for aiming. I wish you used the trigger to shoot, as usual. You press A to shoot.
You can change those. They do have the options to change the controls. So that's your own fault.
I don't ever think to hit the controls. I have this odd quirk about when I'm doing something for review, I just want to play it out of the box. And then I get mad. I'm like, wasn't it this way? And it was like, because you didn't change it, jackass. So,
because you didn't explore the options screen.
Yeah. I go in, I hit subtitles, and then I'm usually out of the options. That's my own damn. My own fault. I didn't find to change it to the trigger. But again, pressing A is not the worst thing in the world. It's your typical 2D, you know, move through the world and shoot things. It's almost like, what was that? Rise and Shine?
Mm-hmm.
It's like Rise and Shine, but 8-bit. In that, you know, you're just like, not even 8-bit, 16? 16 or something like that.
I think they were.
It's 16. Pixelated. It's pixelated. It's Rise and Shine pixelated. And it was really neat that you could, you know, you had four different characters to choose from, one of whom was female. and you could, you just walk through the area, absolutely plowing down enemies. The first set of enemies definitely showed its age and probably politically insensitive at this point in time. You know, you just talk it up to being from the past and move on, because eventually you start plowing down mummies. And there's several different weapons. You start with your pistol. As you progress, some of the enemies will drop. Some of them will be a heavy weapon. Sometimes it's grenades. Sometimes it's rockets. Sometimes it's the laser gun you mentioned. So it's just different ways to just plow your way through these onslaught of enemies. I was actually kind of surprised at how easy it was to progress through the game. Like, in my head, all these old school games we played as kids were hard as fuck. This one, I got quite far into it on accident. I was just, like, walking and shooting, and then all of a sudden I'm on level 4 or 5. And I don't know how I did it.
I will say the Metal Slug games have aged incredibly well.
They have, like I said, I compared it to Rise and Shine because it really felt like something that would have just come out last week that we would have reviewed or you know, would be looking forward to next week, because, hey, it's just you walk and you shoot. And it didn't feel like it was a 20-year-old game apart from the questionable enemies in the beginning. it just felt like something you'd play any other time, even though it's an older game. It features four different modes. There's a high score mode, which is basically just mow down as many enemies as you can
the same four modes that are in every ACA
every
game.
One of them. Yeah. And then the caravan mode, and then the Japanese mode. Yeah. I didn't play the Japanese edition. I figured if there was any kind of text, I probably wouldn't be able to read it. So I just let it go. Yeah, you see Japanese, and like, that's for people who are better at games than me.
Okay. Yeah, if you're new to the ACA games, that's going to be how all of them are. Everyone is going to have the Japanese version, the American mm-hmm. version, a caravan mode, and a high score mode.
See, these were my first two ACA yeah. games. I haven't played any of the others, so I didn't really know what I was getting into other than, hey, these are retro games.
You're missing out on some good stuff.
I clearly am, because like I said, I didn't expect to have this much fun, but I was really enjoying it. My only major complaint is at one point, like I said, I made it 4 or 5 levels into Metal Slug 2, and I hit the back button, and there was no resume option. My option was quit to the title screen, quit to the menu, and, you know, close out the game completely.
Were you in high score mode?
I don't think so. No, I was in the regular mode. But
if you were in regular mode, you could have just... I know if you press
start, and there's like a save and all that. But I pressed something else, and I got a different menu, and it would not let me out of it until I just backed out completely and lost all my score and progress and everything. And I was like, well, that sucked.
Yeah, I know, high score in caravan mode, they will not let you pause it. Mm-hmm. So if you pause it, the only option is to like restart the game. If you were playing standard, at the bottom there should have just been return to game.
Yeah, I couldn't find a return to game. That one didn't work.
I don't know what I did.
I broke something. I hit a button somewhere that was not what it was supposed to have done. That's not unusual for me. It's perfectly within the realm of my normal. I break things. But, you know, otherwise, apart from fucking up and losing my own game somehow, I really enjoyed it. And I give it a solid buy it.
Nice. I absolutely agree. The Metal Slug games are always going to be good. Next ACA game to talk about is called ACA Neo Geo Shock Troopers. Console version, again, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. This one released March 9th on Nintendo Switch for $7.99. And the sequel, which is actually the game that I requested, because that one released June 8th. I don't know what happened with my contact at Hamster, but it seems like he's a month behind on my requests. So that's why we're reviewing games from a month ago, and this is supposed to be something from June 8th, but he accidentally sent us a code for the original Shock Troopers that released March 9th. So we're covering the first one. Shock Troopers is an action game released by SNK in 1997. 8 mercenaries challenge the monstrous terrorist organization. Thrilling action shooting. Players take part in a rescue operation for Dr. George and his granddaughter, who have been kidnapped by the evil organization Bloody Scorpion. The game features the ability for players to choose which route to progress, adding even more replayability to the title. This plays a lot like old school top down action adventure games. If you've played like Akari Warriors on the NES or in the arcade.
I don't think I
no.
have.
No. Ah, bah.
If I did, it was so long ago.
Well, think of Metal Slug, but instead you have a top-down perspective, pretty much. The interesting mechanic here is in a lot of these shooters, you could basically only shoot, like, up.
Yeah.
Your character will be at the bottom, and you'll walk left and right, and you'll just be shooting forward the whole time. This changes it up because you still have 360 degrees of movement and you're going to have to navigate the entire screen because, you know, you'll start off scrolling up and then you'll hit a wall and you'll start scrolling to the right and enemies will be coming from the right. They'll be coming from behind you. So it's not just shoot the enemies in front of you. It's shoot all the enemies everywhere. The controls can be kind of confusing at first because whatever direction you're facing in is where you're going to shoot. If you hold the shoot button down, you just start strafing instead of turning. So if you are trying to spray and pray and hit enemies in all kinds of directions, you're not going to be able to hold down the shoot button. You're pretty much going to want to just mash it while turning back and forth. I have had situations against boss battles where I have a nice aim set up. I'm strafing, holding the button down, chucking grenades when I can. And then I have to turn and move a different direction. So I let go of the fire and then I start shooting again, but I'm shooting like the complete wrong direction now.
Oh no. That's how I would shoot. It'd be like back over my shoulder while I'm looking in another direction.
It's a really unique control scheme in it. But given that, again, this was an old arcade game, they didn't have twin stick, you know, Xbox controllers in the arcades in 97. You had your joystick and your four action buttons to mess with. So adapting it to controller is awkward to play at first, but once you get used to it, it plays really well. The game runs great on the Switch. No kind of hiccups or slowdowns or anything that, you know, wouldn't have already been in the old arcade version, because again, it's a 20-year-old game. I had a lot of fun with it. I've never played the Shock Troopers games before. One of the Neo Geo series that kind of, I don't know, was just never in my area. None of my arcades had that before. So it was pretty cool to get my hands on it and try out a series that I never got to play before. I actually went and bought the second game afterwards because I wanted to play the other one as well. Nice. Didn't get to dive into that one yet, but I plan on jumping into it soon. For the $8, if you've got a Switch, it's awesome old school retro gameplay. I hope the Shock Troopers games jump to other platforms eventually, because it's really cool. Good stuff.
Nice.
And then the final Neo Geo game. What'd you say?
I said it sounds tough, though.
It is. But hey, a lot of these Neo Geo games can be stupidly tough because they were arcade games. They're supposed to be tough. They're supposed to eat all your quarters. So
that's a good point, too. I didn't think of it like that. You're right.
That's why in the standard versions of the games, you can go in and fuck with the dip switches and like drop the difficulty all the way down, give yourself extra lives.
Yeah, I found that.
So you found that, but you didn't find where you could change the controls.
I was up in the lives, man. Oh, it continues to stop.
Anyway, the last of the Neo Geo games to talk about is called King of the Monsters, console version developed and published by Hamster Corporation. Released June 8th on Xbox One for $7.99, King of the Monsters is an action game released by SNK in 1990. One.
Oh, man.
My back hurts just saying that. Players choose from one of six monsters available and battle their way across Japan in order to claim the title of the strongest monster. In addition to normal attacks, such as punches and kicks, master more destructive techniques, such as flame and beam attacks, to overcome the enemies. Cole, what did you think of King of the Monsters?
King of the Monsters, again, has aged really well. You can choose between six different monsters to play as. You can also choose to play against the computer as a bot or against an actual second player, which I was surprised by. You wouldn't expect a game to have local multiplayer that's that old. But it did. You could load up another controller and just lay into your best friend, whoever's sitting on the couch beside of you. Again, you six
of course
monsters
it has that. From. They were old arcade games. They had two players.
I know,
players.
But man, that old. I don't know. You think
it was
like
I was more impressed by the fact that the game has a co-op against the computer.
It did. It did have. I didn't try the co-op against the computer. I did lay into my oldest daughter in a versus match together, but we did not do the co-op. But you can each of the different characters that you can play as, they're all pretty similar fight wise. Like oh, you can punch, you can kick, and you can jump, and not much else. But they all have their own little special move. They equal out, though. They all do the same damage with their special move, but they all have a different little animation that they might do. You have several different scenes where you can just absolutely destroy cityscapes while you're smashing and flinging each other around. It's like the old Godzilla versus Mothra, wasn't that it? Like, where they're just throwing each other into buildings, you know, Godzilla versus King Kong, stuff like that. That's how it plays. And it's just got a little pixelated style to it. It's really, really neat. The only thing that, like, I would really complain about it is just that there's so few limited moves. It's a game from 1991, though. But there's not a lot of variation. It's like, okay, punch, punch, kick, punch, punch, kick, punch, punch, kick. Okay, now what?
You know? Yeah, it is. Oh, it is a very limited game.
And throw you, so it you can kind of wear it out quickly.
Then you have to pin them because it's a wrestling game too.
It is, and that was the thing. Like, I caught it. I didn't get it at first, but when the Godzilla-like monster went running off the screen and running back and then, like, clotheslined them. And I was like, that's from wrestling. That was so weird. There's even, I guess, pseudo ropes, if you will, like electric lines that you can throw each other into and get electrocuted. And it was just so quirky, but fun. But it is more limited. So in that regard, it's more of a try it than an, oh, you have to buy this. It's more, yeah, it's fun. It's good for nostalgia. But yeah, you're only going to play it little quick spurts, maybe one or two matches against a friend before you're like, okay, next.
Yeah, this is definitely a nostalgia game for me. I used to play this game constantly in the arcades. I fucking loved this game in the arcades. I even owned it, the Super Nintendo port. I used to play with my brother all the time. So when I saw this one release on Xbox, I was like, fuck yeah. And the reason you're reviewing it is because I bought it when it came out.
Yep.
I was at the point where I wasn't sure if we'd be hearing from Hamster or not, because things went kind of silent for a bit. And as you can see, we're reviewing things from a month ago. But I was so thrilled that the game came out. I bought it immediately. And
wow,
it is absolutely fun, but it has aged significantly worse than Metal Slug. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot better than a bunch of the other fighting games that are out there in the ACA collection. Just, again, because the difficulty in so many of those fighting games is just brutally unfair. At least in King of the Monsters, you can, you know, play it and enjoy it and beat some monsters and wreck a city and beat shit up.
That's funny when it pops up and shows you how many casualties there were because of you guys stomping around and destroying. Like, way to guilt trip me for just having fun. I only killed 20,000 people. Shit.
Yeah, I loved King of the Monsters. I was so excited. It was fun.
It's not, you know, brutal in any kind of way. Well, I mean, they get electrocuted. But it was, you know, I didn't feel bad about throwing the controllers at the kids and saying, here, fight with each other for a few minutes. How do you feel about it? And they're like, that's kind of fun. You know, so it's for the price. Like I said, it's more nostalgia than anything, but it was still kind of fun.
I agree. Give it a
yeah. And if you're a fan of that kind of stuff like you were, then, you know, absolutely, you're not going to want to miss it anyway.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of
people who are fans of it aren't even going to give a fuck about what I say about it. They've already bought it months ago.
I know there's a lot of people who bitch about the Neo Geo games being $8 each, and they're like, oh, I'm going to wait for a sale. I'm going to wait for a bundle. None of these games have been bundled on other platforms. So stop waiting for it to happen, because I probably not going to happen. They've done the Arcade Archive series on PlayStation for, you know, since near the launch of the console. And while the Neo Geo games are finally coming to Xbox as well as PlayStation and Switch, those original Arcade Archives games, they never, ever really went on any kind of significant sale. They were never bundled at all. So people expecting sales or bundles on these, don't get your hopes up.
Just Well, I think, though, like, people see, you know, that they all have the same, you know, series name of ACA and Neo Geo, and they assume that they're all going to be alike in some way or another, and that's why they expect them to be bundled. These are better if you just pick the ones that are your type of gameplay. Like, if you like shooters, pick up Metal Slug 2. If you like fighters, skip Metal Slug 2 and pick up King of the Monsters instead. Don't think that you've got to get every single... They're not Pokemon. You don't got to collect them all.
It's definitely... Find the ones you're going to enjoy.
Cherry pick. So,
and appreciate the fact that you could get a Neo Geo game for $8, where in our day, Neo Geo games literally cost hundreds of dollars for a single game. Look it up, kids. That shit was expensive. Neo Geo games were fucking expensive.
And think of how much you would have spent if you were going to an arcade and plunking down, you know, your quarters to play. Like, how much did we pay for games back then when we were just throwing quarters at the machine?
Seriously. It's nuts.
You could lose $100 a month just playing one game of, you know, like, just trying to get through the tower at Mortal Kombat or something. But,
or hell, even the virtual console Neo Geo games on the Wii, those were $9 each. So you're still getting them cheaper.
It's a deal. It's still a bargain. Getting
them cheaper. But yeah, that is, I guess that's it with you, Eternal.
It's good having you on here. Thank you.
Do you have any final words to wrap it up before we move on?
No. I'm never going to get good at coming up with a segue out of here, so thanks for having me.
It's okay. You tried. Next game to talk about is called Princess Maker 3 Fairy Tales Come True, developed and published by CFK Corporation or Company Limited. Released June 27th on Steam for $19.99. You must take care of a little girl and raise her as your own daughter. A fairy named Uzu appears as an advisor, and the new feature of selecting the player's occupation is added into the game system. Schedule system allows players to select 15 days of scheduling from each class, unique rivals, and events make an appearance to add drama elements to the game. The interface has been made simpler than previous Princess Maker series, and the album mode allows you to view images from vacation or ending within the game. Kind of Ingrishy, but to make sense of it all, we have our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
Doing all right, sir, though I'm not 100% sure that I'll be able to make sense of the English because it got to me too, just a tad. But overall, it's a good weekend. I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, long day.
That I can relate to so very well. But it's done.
Fun relaxation stuff.
Session.
Indeed. And then I have a long morning tomorrow. So.
Can mornings just be mellow and relaxed like they show on TV?
I wish. So yeah, Princess Maker 3, what is this game? Because I know you were excited about it.
I was, because a little backstory, back in, like, say, 1998, I got access to a fan translation of the DOS version of Princess Maker 2. And a friend and I would play them, like, constantly, and we'd compare how our daughters were growing up. It was the weirdest thing. But the game was a lot of fun. It's a very simple game, but in and of itself, that's probably what made it so fun. So, as you can probably imagine, Princess Maker never got a U.S. release here, or at least it didn't, until the year 2016, when 2 got re-released over here as Princess Maker 2 Refine. And then we got to the point we're at now, where we got Princess Maker 3. They were originally done by Gainax, believe it or not. You know, the guys who did Evangelion. So of course, when you was like, hey, you want to do this review? Like, yeah, I was this close to buying it. Or rather, I did, and I had to request a refund. That's how much I was excited to buy this, this game. I had already bought it. And I won't lie, the game is definitely still what I like about Princess Maker games in general. But it did have a few weird, like, crashes, and it had a moment where there was a period of time where I just couldn't get it to boot up. I had to uninstall, reinstall, and, like, the third time's a charm, it actually worked for me. And I haven't had any issues with that since. But I did have two freezes. I'm not sure if that's something that they're working on or what. But casting all that aside, let's talk about the game itself. You, as Joe described, you are a person who is tasked with raising a daughter who was pretty much a reincarnation of a fairy. And she's somehow 10 years old. We don't understand any of that. In fact, the fairy, after you create your character profile, she erases your memory. It's like, here you go, you got a kid. It's like it's never ever happened. Nothing's different. You just happen to have a 10-year-old now. And you start out, you have to name your child, which took me 20 minutes because I'm terrible at naming children. You choose your kid's birthday, your kid's blood type, and your own birthday. And I know it affects the kid's astrological sign and yours, but I'm not sure if it has any effect on the story, though it very well may, since this game is heavily based around events. Then you choose your profession, which I wasn't quite sure about how that worked initially. I chose to be a merchant, and the Great Fairy made sure to let me know that my life was nothing more than coveting riches with no concern for anything else in my life. So much money that I had nowhere else for which to store it. So, apparently I was a covetous man. But hey, gotta get the work done to sell those goods, you know what I'm saying? So, whatever, fairy lady.
You do you.
That's right. So I did have to look it up later, but I did figure out what the purpose of the profession is, aside from, you know, the great fairy, you know, being a jerk towards you. It affects how much money you start the game with. It affects the amount of money that you're paid every couple of months, because Uzu will give you money. So basically he's giving you like child support. There's a failure credit, which I never experienced, thankfully, where if you go bankrupt, the great fairy will cut you a loan. And the amount that you're able to be lent is based on your starting profession and also your parental disposition. If you're a happy parent or a strict parent or a disciplinarian of sorts, all based around what job you pick. Imagine if that's how real life was. Like, depending on the job you choose, you will always be a complete piece of shit. Like, I want to be a doctor. Oh, you're an awful human being, concerned with nothing but playing with people's lives, doctor. It's like, I donate money to orphans on a regular basis. Not good enough. Not good enough. You're a horrible human being. But once you get through all that stuff, the game will kick you in, and you are officially raising this kid. And it becomes what's basically a scheduling simulator. You start out, the kid's standing up looking at you. You get to choose between a number of different events you can have your child do. You can either give your child different lectures, set your child up for lectures in the form of, like, say, art class, normal class, cooking, martial arts, music, fasting, which shocked the shit out of me. I thought they were talking about, it's called diet class. And I've played a lot of Japanese role-playing games, which make me think about the diet building. So I was like, maybe they mean diet as in, you know, learn how to be a successful businesswoman. No, they mean sit on the floor with classmates and starve your ass to death. But not quite to death, just close enough to lose some weight. But yeah, diet class and like a number of other professions. Then you can also opt to like give her a part-time job. You can be like a farmer. Or a babysitter, you can do housekeeping, a number of different jobs. And when I gave my daughter the choice of being a farmer, a farmhand, she spent all of her time doping around and leaning on cows eating apples and crap. I was very insulted by my child doing that. But at the same time, she's also a 10-year-old, so what did I expect her to do? I wasn't beating my kid! I don't care. She's more lively than my real kid, which is non-existent. So there you go. She's the closest I got right now, and I ain't spanking my baby.
She's all I have.
I named her Celestia, by the way. She's adorable. So all those things I mentioned. Oh, and also you can take her on, send her on vacation, or just let her play in town, which is very funny because you're not in town with her. The fairy Uzu's in town with her. So I don't picture Uzu stopping a kidnapper from taking my daughter and running off with her. She's going to run back and tell me what I'm going to freaking do. But every time you do one of these different activities, it affects a ridiculous number of stats you have to track for her. I actually wrote them all down. But stamina, intelligence, vitality, pride, morality, elegance, attitude, sense, charm, courage, trust, height, weight, bust, waist, and hip.
Good Lord.
I have never had to track so many stats in my life. I think Princess Maker 2 had less stats to track. But so essentially, as you play this game and you do these different activities, these stats will go up, they'll go down, and that'll affect any number of things. There's another stat called stress, where if you overwork your kid or you don't give her enough breaks, her stress meter will go too high and she has a high chance of getting sick, which is not what you want. I ain't let my baby get sick. Just saying. So I don't know what happens there because I'm a good parent. And I'm not going to make my kid sacrifice her health for my evil review experimentation. Just know, don't let your kid get sick. One thing I thought was funny, though, is like every once in a while, depending on the different types of activities you do and when you do them, sometimes an event will get triggered. And depending on how you raised your kid and how their stats broke down, it will determine how well they do. One example that I ended up with while I played the game is a surprise exam came up. It was a four-section exam that added up to 100 points, like social studies and science and like two other things I don't remember. She scored a 29 out of 100. I wanted to cry. Like, clearly I didn't have my kid study hard enough. And her response was, I don't want my dad to find out. I don't want him to be disappointed in me. My trust stat went down, too. And I didn't get a chance to confront her and say, you know, Uzu ratted your ass out, right? I know you failed your goddamn exam. What you going to say about that? But I didn't have a chance to. All I could do the next day was say, hey, how you doing? And she was like, I'm cool, Dad. I don't trust you or nothing, but I'm good. There were two other events I remember. Another event that I came across was, and Princess Maker 2 had events like this as well, where depending on how high your stats are, there's like a regular event that can take place in the game, like a tournament or a contest, any number of things of that nature, where if your stats are high enough, you can win a prize. It's like there's a New Year's festival that happens every year where the Royals will weigh a series of competition, a number of other girls, including your kid, and if your kid's the most elegant, you'll win $3,000. And who knows, maybe some accolades. I wouldn't know because my kid is rough around the edges. She eats apples behind cow's butts. I don't know. But point is, I'm going to go back to that game later, and she's going to win that elegance competition because I ain't raising no chump. Royals ain't walk over her. To hell with that. But believe it or not, that is the entirety of the game. Though, something's worth pointing out. I thought that was kind of funny, is that when you set your schedule, there's about probably 192 periods in the year. They outright tell you. But from what I could tell, when you set the kid's schedule, I don't think there's a limit to how far you can go. So if you want to set up the entire 192 in one shot, you probably can. Just like line up 192 events, click go, and hope that your kid doesn't die by the end of it. You also, one thing that made me sad about the game is that it actually took away something that I liked heavily in 2, which was the expedition adventure mode. And what that was depending on, you can send your kid off on adventures. So there was like a number of different locations on the game, and it became like a pseudo RPG where you walked around the map, you found treasure, you ran across NPCs, fought monsters, all of that. And your skills were based on like how well you did like in martial arts class, or you know, how rough your kid was around the edges. And then that also in turn led to a number of endings. Like you could marry, you couldn't become a princess because your kid was too rough, but your kid didn't need to be a princess because she ran her own dojo, stuff like that. But they took that out of the game entirely. There's no adventure mode, which made me really sad because that was one of my favorite components to 2. But I will say it didn't make the game bad. It just meant it was lacking something that I missed. Yeah. The game itself is still a lot of fun. just know that when you go on to this game, you're not getting action, you're not getting excitement, but you are getting a lot of fun. Well, who am I kidding? You are getting some excitement. You're watching a kid grow up. That's very exciting. And when it's all said and done, your money is still in your pocket. So, hey, what's not to like, right? Yeah. If you screw up your job, load up another save file. Try again.
$20 for this is significantly cheaper than the cost of raising an actual child.
You damn right it is. And that's where I sign up for. People think I hate children. Oh, no, I love children. I hate the money they cost. I hate that very much. So, as crazy as they sound, being able to play a simulator with a kid is pretty fun to me. It's nice to just kind of sit there and run the numbers. Like, well, my kid became a success. What about your kid? Eh, my kid's delinquent. Yeah, that's cool. Let's go get beers. Yeah, perfect. It's perfect.
Now, and I'm curious to know. I see on Steam that it is sitting at an overall mixed review, mixed reputation. Like, what is the community upset about with the game?
I think it's because there's a, like I mentioned earlier at the very beginning of the review, it's glitchy. Like, I've had freezes when I played the game. And when I couldn't get the game to start up, I went looking around. And it seemed like a number of people were having the issue where they just couldn't get the game to load. Like, it would go into an infinite attempt at booting up until it eventually gave up. Though, they eventually say, yeah, well, we patched it, try it now. And I assume that the patch worked because I was able to boot it up, but who knows how many other people out there still can't get the game to boot up. Yeah. And I know I was getting crashes, so other people were probably getting crashes. Plus, there's a number of spelling and grammatical errors in the game, too. So it's not perfect. And even beyond that, could be people disappointed about lack of expedition mode, because I can imagine a number of people, you know, the general public, where if you see there's really good or it's really bad. And if you're missing something that they liked in the first game, it becomes really bad immediately. So that could be a thing, lacking that mode. Aside from that, though, I'm not 100% sure. But I think those would probably be the main reasons. Oh, and of course, it's not an action-based game. People probably want something more than it actually provides. Yeah. Like, more than it's meant to be provided. And you got to remember, this game was originally made in the 90s. So this game was made in the 90s, translated and ported to Steam in 2017. We're talking at least 20 years. About 20 years of this game just stewing. So someone could buy this game expecting something that got released at minimum 2010. They're getting a game from the 90s. And they're like, what the hell is this crap? So,
man, this episode is just jam-packed with 20-year-old games.
That's not. What were some of the other games?
We just went over a handful of the ACA Neo Geo games before you joined us.
There's more coming out. Jeez. Dude,
every week there's new ones coming out.
Well, if you're able to write back to them, tell them to put Magical Drop 3 on the Switch, not 2. I don't know what the heck they were thinking there.
2's better than nothing.
True, but knowing that 3 actually exists is why I can't buy 2. It's like, well, give me the game that I want, I'll buy it. Like, cities of, like, Catan, it was on Xbox 360 back in the day. And when it came out, I was like, I love Catan. People are like, you're going to buy it. I was like, nope, because Cities and Nights is the expansion that makes the game fun. And if you can't give me Cities and Nights, I don't want to play the game. And, of course, I never got Cities and Nights, so I never bought Catan. But that's how I roll. If I know better exists, I'm waiting for the better. Don't make me buy your game twice with some loyalty pack. You know, if you show us your support, like, no, you know what it takes to get my support. Don't front. So, but yeah, this game I think is honestly fun. You just know, as long as you go into it knowing what you're going to get, and heaven forbid they make sure that these darn crashes stop happening. If there's a way to do it, because it could even be something as a matter of. You know, it was meant to work on old hardware. They never got around to like actually completely going through it and making sure that it was 100% compatible with present day hardware. I don't know.
No. Let me see if I could read your review properly. Based on the overall glitchiness of the game and the fact that it's a niche title, despite how fun it is, overall it gets probably a try it rating.
Yes. You're starting to understand how I roll, man. We got this thing going here. I like it. But yes, I definitely would say it's a try it kind of game, because there's definitely some hiccups as far as performance goes and grammatical issues and the like. And it may not be what everybody's searching for, but if you like simulator type stuff, you have a nurturing side to you, you're cheap as shit and don't want to pay for a real child. All those things are good qualifiers to give this game a shot. But it isn't a one size fit all sort of title, so.
Yeah. All right, sounds good. Purnell, thanks as always for coming on and covering the game for us, and I'm sure we'll hear from you again soon.
Thank you, good sir. It was my pleasure. I got a daughter to go back to.
Next game to talk about is called Chronolink DX, developed by Give Me 5 Entertainment, released July 6th on iOS and Android for $9.99. In Chronolink DX, you're tasked with connecting cubes shaped like animals in as few moves as possible to progressively unlock historical eras. There are a total of 8 eras in the game, each leading to ever more challenging puzzles. Meet new characters, learn new mechanics, and hum along to the mesmerizing soundtrack as you experience history from a whole new perspective. After all, to travel forward in time, you must first understand the past. We had our friend Jacob Garner cover this one, and he emailed in his review, and he says, Chronolink DX is a puzzle game from Give Me 5, which I just covered. In it, you'll explore different time periods, moving to the next level by making sure all of the puzzle pieces connect in 15 or less moves. Each time period introduces new puzzle pieces while still using pieces from previous eras. It's simplistic in description, but the game gets fairly complex quickly after about 10 levels of hand-holding. The game is perfect for commutes or quick play in the bathroom, and while it doesn't save your position within the puzzle itself when quitting, it doesn't matter due to there only being 15 moves in a puzzle. There's definite longevity in the game, as there's 200 puzzles in it, and if you get frustrated, you could come back at a later time, and it's easy to pick right back up. If you like previous games that I've reviewed, like Bluck or Blocko or Zirkle, then I definitely recommend you check out Chronolink DX. So, thank you for that, Jacob. That was a quickie. But, lots going on this episode, so let's move on. And finally tonight, we have two more games to talk about, and joining us to wrap things up is our good friend Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I find that I'm frequently the last person now.
you're a good one to wrap things up.
Aww.
I recorded all the other stuff already, so you're the last one I'm recording.
Yeah, I'm the last one to get ready to be like, hang on, I gotta play this game for 5 more minutes.
You're the last one with your shit together.
Yes, exactly.
That and you were at Whataburger, and I swear one of these days I'm going to try Whataburger.
Oh man, well come to Texas. It will be my treat. Not the trip, just the Whataburger.
Oh well, if you were paying for the trip, I would have been there.
Ow.
I actually looked it up, and apparently they have them in Fayetteville, Arkansas now. So if I ever do one of my summer trips to Arkansas again,
yeah,
it's there.
Go get some Whataburger with the 1-Ups or Lucio. I know Lucio likes Whataburger. He posts about it sometimes.
I'll have to have him bring me some at MAGFest. Be like, just, you know, wrap it up.
I was going to say, the cold Whataburger is not the same quality.
You could nuke it, right? Just toss it in the microwave for a few minutes.
Sure. Anyway, are we talking about video games this week?
Nah, might as well. You covered two games for us this week, and we're going to start things off with a game called Toby, The Secret Mind, developed by Lucas Navratil, published by our friends at Head Up Games. It released July 6th on the PS4 for $14.99, previously available on Xbox and Steam. A peaceful way of life in a small village in the mountains was thrown into disorder. Someone has kidnapped most of its residents. A couple of brave hearts tried to rescue their friends, but none of them has returned. Little Toby didn't want to just sit and wait, so he decided to find them by himself. He went to the near deep forest, but he soon realized that this is just the beginning. Go with Toby on an eerie adventure in a dark and creepy world full of dangerous situations, enemies, and challenging puzzles. Chris, what'd you think of this one?
All right, Toby, The Secret Mind. Well, it definitely struck me with a sense of familiarity. It basically looks exactly like Limbo, which is that that one game that came out the years ago. I don't know how many years ago, so it's just the years. like when the years fly by, you don't know how many years. It's just there are years and they have flown. Yeah. So at first glance, it's kind of like that. And indeed, it is a challenge platformer. I guess, you know, in my limited experience in video games, I like to specify, like, in platformers that, like, there's an action platformer and there are, like, puzzle platformers and then, like, challenge platformers. I guess it's, like, it's between challenge and puzzle. You know, action being where you actually interact with, like, enemies or something. You don't do that in this game. There's no, no run and gunning. So, it's interesting, like, what you just summarized right there is the first time I had ever heard or known what the story is in Toby the Secret Mine, or Toby the Secret Mine, sorry. Because it's one of those games, it just starts up and you're going. There's a little bit of a title screen where you can then say continue or just go. And yeah, as soon as you go, it's just like you're there, like you're starting the game. So there's practically no story to it, but you get the sense, because of how simple everything is laid out, like of what's going on. You are a little black thing, looks kind of like a cat, kind of like a person, maybe a person with cat ears, something like that. And due to, I suppose, the bloom lighting that has been applied to everything, it's kind of like, you know how things are dark when the sun is behind them? Because, you know, they become a silhouette sort of thing. Yeah. That's sort of how this game is. It has, like, all this lighting, but everything that you're looking at, like, in the playing field is pitch black. So the challenge is not only figuring out how to proceed in the mine by, you know, pushing things around or flipping switches or finding secret areas, things like that. Like, not only do you have to navigate all that, you have to do it in a silhouette. So you don't know if you can push something, you don't know whether it is, you know, what kind of thing it is or what happens if you go up to it. So, you know, and plus everything blends into the background. So you're kind of like running around and then, you know, you're like, okay, I can't jump up here. And, oh, okay, here part of the wall is actually a crate. And I'm going to push this crate. Which, by the way, this game absolutely fails the start to crate ratio set up by old man Murray back in the years ago, internet. Okay. A crate is one of the first things you actually interact with in the whole game, so hate to say it. But so about Toby and the Secret Mine, it is basically like that. It's you're going through, solving the puzzles, chasing down these much larger kids with cat hats on, or evil cats or whatever with red eyes, as they kidnap, like they've kidnapped all your friends and they're like dragging them off in cages and such. And so you're basically chasing after them, but if you go too fast, then you might actually miss saving your friends because they're usually hidden around the stages. So the one counter that the game has is how many friends you've saved, and the total being 26. And I think I saved like 5 or 6 by the time I got a few, I got about a dozen, maybe 20 screens in or so, and I feel like I probably missed a few, but I was trying to get through it. So it's got that. What I really liked about the game is that the background that isn't obscured in darkness is really gorgeous. It's got great light effects. The background looks really nice. The sound effects are really crisp. There's not really a soundtrack to speak of, but, you know, it's a pleasant game aesthetically, even if it's a little disturbing because it's all dark and such. But I felt like it made me feel better to look at it than Limbo did. Because I felt like Limbo was just there to make you uncomfortable, you know?
Plus, this game has colors.
Yes, it has some colors. Like, it has a fully colored background and stuff. It's, like I said, it's one of those things. It's not like that everything's just black and white. It's that you can't see the actual field in which you are playing. So, yeah, I had some fun with this one. It was one of those where I just played it until the puzzles got too hard, and then I kind of was like, okay, I'm moving on now. And, but I think that this type of game definitely has its audience. And if you're the kind of person who likes, puzzle challenge platformers that are like pleasant to look at, but also edgy and a little bit creepy, then I think this is a really good pick. And it's very impressive that it was more or less done with one guy.
Yeah.
Like, didn't he do most of the programming and the art and everything?
I believe so. And then I know Head Up Games stepped in to help with, like, porting and stuff like that. Because it was originally a Steam game. Showed up on Xbox One a couple of months ago. Something like that. I'm trying to remember what the release date was on that. January, that's what it was. Showed up there in January, and now it hit PlayStation. I'm confused at the fact that on Steam and on Xbox the game is $9.99, but for some reason the PlayStation 4 version is $14.99.
That I don't really get that myself. I mean, last time I pointed that out, the developer got a little mad at me, I guess, so I don't really have an opinion there. I guess I can just say that, like, you know, they may have added some things, but there's nothing in the game or in the game's, like, descriptions or anything to indicate that, so...
I'm sure to remember what developer got mad at you.
Oh, it was Mastiff for Guruman.
Ah.
Which is funny, because there's so many $14.99 games that I want to play now, it's just that was the first one. But, like, $14.99 seems to be the indie game price tag. I think we may be experiencing a mass inflation.
Yeah, I think $15 is, like, the standard price for the majority of games that come out anymore. I remember the day back in the early days of the Xbox 360, you could get Vidya games for $4.99.
Oh my goodness, $4.99, you don't say.
Yeah, $4.99 was the normal, and then it went to $9.99, and now it's like $14.99. A lot of them are getting closer to $19.99.
Yeah.
So
I feel like I don't know. I feel like $7.99 has been a thing forever, but that's only because I play largely Nintendo, and most of their virtual console premium stuff is $7.99.
Yeah, Super Nintendo games are $7.99.
Yes.
Except Earthbound.
Yeah, it has the Earthbound tax on it, but you know what? I forgive them, because collectors made that game.
God damn right I forgive them for that, because I still bought it on the Wii U and on the 3DS for $10.
You know, I'm such a bad fan, I have not yet bought it on the Wii U, only the 3DS.
You but son of a bitch.
I still have my cartridge, though, so I don't know.
I miss mine. That's one of the few things that, you know, over the years, you sell things for bills and for other shit, and I regret the Earthbound one every day. But maybe one day I'll get it back.
You'll get it back. I believe in you.
We got a shitload of money for it, though, so that was worth it.
Well, that's good. So Toby the Secret Mine. Go play it. If you can, you know, find it on a different system for cheaper, I mean, maybe go for that. It does seem more like a Steam game than something I would consider a must-have for the PlayStation 4, because there's only one action button, and it's just standard platforming action, you know?
Yeah.
Well, okay, there's two action buttons. There's a jump, and there's a flip switch button. So, I mean, you can handle that with a keyboard.
True. Yeah, I really enjoyed it when we covered it on Xbox, so it's good to hear that you enjoyed it as well. I don't get the price difference. I don't know if it was just that difficult to port over, or I know sometimes, you know, there's a price issue where it wasn't supposed to be that price and it might come down. Who knows? That is not for us to judge and decide. But
yeah. We'll see when they yell at us.
Maybe. Nah, the head up guys have always been good with us. So hopefully, you know, I might ask them in an email and be like, is there any reason why? And maybe they'll clarify. Yeah. Who knows?
There you go.
Final game to talk about tonight is called The Tenth Line, developed and published by Sungazer Software. It released June 27th on the PS4 for $12.99, released back in March on Steam for $9.99, a console RPG featuring a colorful cast of characters, unique battle and level-up systems, quick 2D platforming action, and an original fantastical story about friendship, faith, and finding your place in the world. Chris, what did you think of The Tenth Line?
The Tenth Line, yes. Yeah, I needed an extra week with this one, and I'll tell you why.
Do tell.
So I downloaded it. I was going to say I popped it in, like a Super Nintendo cart, but I didn't. I popped in the code and got the game.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. So I started up, and it... You know, I get to the screen, I'm like, okay, new game time. And they're like, you have 3 difficulties to choose from, and it's normal, easy, and very easy. And I'm like, oh, okay, so normal. You know, I have beaten 2 Etrian Odyssey games. I am not afraid of any RPG. So I picked normal and started the game off. And basically, by the time the first hour had elapsed, I had done so many tutorials to get through the demo stage that, like, I was like, I actually started another game just to go through all the tutorials again, because I was like, what all is going on here? But, and then the second time through, it's like, yeah, okay, I figured it all out, and then I got into doing all the things, and once I kind of got over the hump of, like, learning everything that's in this game, it was really good. So I'll try and break down a few of these just to entice the people who like the complex system games. So, and plus, you know, it was largely like kind of drawing comparisons. So the main part of the game, the action part of the game, is a side scrolling platformer. And, it's funny enough, there's only one game I know that does it this way that I personally have played. So you run around this 2D platform, type thing, and the way you engage in battles is that there will be an enemy running around, and if you run into the enemy, then you have to fight them in a turn-based battle.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so there's no real action RPG to speak of. It is a turn-based RPG, but one that involves platforming. So the only other game that comes to mind where I've done this is a European-only Game Boy Color game called Dinosaurus. Dinosaur apostrophe us, where you run around as a little baby dinosaur, and you try to find, like, basically the boss in a platforming stage, but you just randomly run into menu-based battles.
That's so weird.
So it's like Dinosaurus for all you Dinosaurus fans out there.
Oh yeah, we have the monopoly on Dinosaurus diehard fans, because you are on the show.
Because I'm the one.
You are the Dinosaur Us fan.
It is true. It is true. I will wake up the rest of the world to this game someday, though.
I really do want to check it out.
Yeah, you should. Okay, so the 10th line, though, to talk about the game we're talking about. Okay, so it's that. But the other thing is that, okay, you have your 3 characters that meet right on the offset. You've got the princess, who, as far as I played into the game, and I did play a couple hours into the game, is only known as the princess. And then there's Rick, who is Rick and Tox, who are both beastmen, quote unquote. So a kind of anthropomorphic race that, you know, one of them is a fox who is a thief. And the other one is a dragon who is, like, basically an old black mage kind of guy. Literally, he is a black dragon. So,
that's racist.
I know. I can't help what color he is. So, the princess is also a sword fighter. and she, for whatever reason, is the only one who can push boulders around. So in the platforming section, you actually switch between these three characters and use their map powers, that is to say, the princess who can push stuff, the thief who can throw stuff, and the dragon who can blow fire on stuff, or ice, or poison. It gets you through various obstacles. And he's also the high jumper. So you have to use all three of their techniques in order to get through the stages, which that is a lot like the Lost Vikings. So it's kind of the Lost Vikings and kind of Dinosaurus. And so then, when you actually get into these battles, they... So the way it goes is that they put your characters on three different lines that are on the field, and also on those lines directly in front of them are three rows of enemies. And so your character, you choose the line that you're going to attack, and your character will attack it. And if it's a short-range attack, then if they kill the guy that's the first in line, then they're done attacking. But if they're attacking in a whole line, then they can attack all the people in that line. Or they can do a vertical line where they fight just the whole front row. And you basically, the whole thing is set up with playing cards. That's how you choose your stuff. So once you pick your attack card, then it shows you your attacks that are available to use. These attacks, basically an amount of SP has to be gained, skill points, I guess, and you gain SP every turn. So sometimes you can't use all your moves every turn. You have to kind of build up a little bit. Yeah. But so your first couple of moves might be a little weak, but then you build up to more powerful moves. And so then you utilize that. And those lines of enemies can actually go about 12 deep. So you could be fighting like 30 enemies in a battle. I mean, I didn't play that far, but that's... The game promises that you can fight dozens of enemies at a time. So, yeah, so it gets pretty crazy in that sense. And that part of the game reminds me of Mega Man Battle Network.
Oh, and I love the Battle Network games.
Yes, and it's very effectively, like, it captures that spirit of, like, okay, what attack is going to work best for this enemy placement? The strongest enemy's over there in the middle, so how am I going to get at him? And, like, you wind up strategizing in the same way that you would strategize in that game. So, then you get into towns, and in your first town, you know, you're just there in the dead of night, so there's not really a whole lot of people to talk to. I think that's just so that they can give you that sort of, you're not out of the woods yet sort of feeling, because you're chased out of that town and into the next playing area. But in that town, then you start talking to people, and you discover that on top of gaining, like, villager quests, like side quests, which I want to say is a lot like Xenoblade Chronicles, only because that's what I'm currently playing on the 3DS, but it's not nearly that crazy. Like, Xenoblade Chronicles, you can get, like, 10 quests per person in any town. But in this one, so the villagers give you quests. The other way that you can interact with them is by playing a card game, and it's a card game that's almost exactly like the one in Final Fantasy IX. It's you start off with a deck of player cards that are pretty strong, and they have numbers on the corners, and you have to like play them, and if somebody plays a higher card, then they capture your card, and if you play a higher card connecting to that, then it flips their card over, etc., etc. And you can actually win money and prizes this way, so it's not just useless like in Final Fantasy IX. So this thing has a triple triad. Well, not quite triple triad. I guess it's that other one. But
Quadmaster, was it? Or Tetramaster?
Tetramaster, that's the one. Thank you.
Man, fuck that. Triple triad was so much better.
Yeah, well, triple triad, like that was Final Fantasy VIII's card game for who don't know. But... Didn't you win, like, actual prizes from that, or...?
You could win cards in the game.
Okay, yeah. Same thing with Final Fantasy IX. There's no real consequence to winning or losing. In this game, you can get really good items if you win against, you know, high-difficulty players. And it tells you their difficulty before you get into the game so that you don't wind up getting fleeced. But I think the only thing you can lose is the money that you bet. so that's not too bad. I'm sure there are high stakes games later. So that gets me to the item system. So the item system is also a little crazy, and this one took me quite a while to like really understand. So you gain items in the game. They're usually kind of like food products or basic supplies. And instead of using them like conventionally, like just, you know, selecting them in your item menu and then, you know, eating bread for health or something like that, you actually use them in your leveling up and skill gaining abilities. So here's how that works. It basically sets up all of your leveling up on a grid, which is a lot like Final Fantasy X. So the sphere grid system. I'm not even joking. This game has so much stuff. So the sphere grid system is now in play. You start off on, it's not a sphere though, it's actually a flat, looks like kind of like the game of Sorry or a Monopoly board or something. So you start on one block, and you have all these different colored squares around you, like red, yellow, blue, and they each correspond to a certain stat that you can gain, which would be like blue for, I want to say it's HP, and then green for some other thing. Red for attack. And so every time you gain a level, you can then move move forward or in any direction on the board. But in order to fill in that sphere grid hole, like, you have to use any item from your inventory, and every item in the game has an elemental affinity and a path. So this is going to take a bit to describe. Okay, so a weak item, let's say it's a weak item and it's a red affinity and you've got a blue square that you want to fill out. Well, you can do that, but and because it's a weak item, it will let you build a straight line across that square. And because it's not the same color, you won't get much of a stat bonus for filling it in. But you can do it and then move on. And you know, what you're trying to do is fill in the squares in order to move over to a skill, which will be on a set part of the board. And if you get to that skill, then you gain that skill, and it's another attack card that you can use in battle. But if you use a more advanced item, then it might have, like, a cross. So that means that once you build onto the square right next to you, you can then either build another square on top, on bottom, or to the, you know, other direction of that square. And then that gives you more flexibility on where you can move your next piece. And if it's the same color as the square, then you gain extra stats. So what you end up doing is item hunting for items that are rare, which makes them more powerful. They all have a rarity rating, of course. And you want it to be rare and have a lot of directions that you can move, and you want it to be the same color as the next square that you're going for, in order to get the best results. Otherwise, you can just, you know, build them across and just try and get the skills, and maybe your character won't, you know, end up being that powerful. But you can go back and actually replace the items, I think. I believe I did that. So, you know, you can kind of build your character as you go along. But that's the way that you gain levels and gain skills. So all of this, in learning this and getting through the first area and through the first town, took me like 2.5 hours.
Wow.
To mess with all that stuff, yeah. And then by the time I got into the next area, it was introducing support characters, which are characters that can kind of help you out in battle by taking several turns to build up like one of two super moves they can sort of jump in and help you with, but they don't have any part of the platforming. So that's the next thing I was learning by the time all my you know, things had elapsed. So all that to say, I haven't even touched on like the story or the characters or anything, and honestly I don't even feel the need to. However, if you're into story and characters, this one is actually really well written. I was getting quite enthralled with it, and I thought I wouldn't be, because I thought, okay, well, the characters are real out there, because you got animal people, and an obviously spoiled princess who's, you know, just going to fall under a whole bunch of tropes and stuff. But then when characters started talking, I was like, oh, okay, actually, this is really interesting, so I'm going to give this more of a chance. The cool thing is, all that stuff I just said about the game, you could just completely toss aside by putting the game in very easy mode. Because if you just want to see the story of the game, you can literally cut out all encounters, all the, like, necessity of gaining any kind of level. You can basically skip all the items and just run from, you know, do the platforming sections the way you're supposed to, and then just go to the next area. Like, the game gets that easy if you want it to.
Wow.
And I was actually, yeah, I was actually like, this is kind of cool, because maybe I don't really want, like, maybe I want to look ahead and see what's, like, actually out there before I, like, commit myself to sitting here for an hour trying to win every card game and, you know, picking out items to put in spear grids and, like, training up my characters. I didn't even get into training up the characters. I'm not even going to, because this is running long. Let's just say there's a whole nother layer, and it involves the items as well.
Bottom line, it sounds like this is just a ridiculously deep game with influences from all over the RPG spectrum.
Yeah, that's a very good summary that I was just about to get to.
Beat you to it.
No, you did fine. Yeah, but I just really like that if I want to, I can just read the story, or I can get really, really involved in the gameplay, which honestly is entertaining to me. I love getting into systems. So it really is like this action RPG that I think is for the more amounts of audiences than the usual RPG. It's not, it's like, it can get intimidating if you want it to. And certainly if you start a normal game off the cuff, then it has the light mode, which actually I haven't even tried, so I don't know what's in it. But I will say, like, it's got those levels of, like, of casual to getting really into the systems. And then I'm sure that there's some kind of hard mode in there, too, because the game seems set up for the battles get really challenging. I was pretty impressed with that, actually. Like, it's not at all the kind of game you can just push the cross button and get through.
Yeah.
So
I feel like I shouldn't even need to ask this, but for $12.99, what is your verdict on this one?
Yeah, definitely get it for $12.99. It's a game that I feel could easily go for $20 and be just as good for a download game, that is to say. If it had a physical release, I would actually buy it. And the last point, I swear this is the last point, the soundtrack is gorgeous. It's really, really pleasant. It's very acoustic, and it's very, like, kind of subtle. I don't know. It's like it adds a great feel to the game. It's not overly orchestral. But it's very pleasing. Like, just the opening title screen is a great little song.
Nice. And if anybody picks it up on Steam for $9.99, I know that they have a DLC bundle that is the soundtrack and a digital art book for $5.
Yeah, get those. Get that soundtrack.
I have no idea if the soundtrack's available elsewhere. I might have to look that up.
I googled it. That's the only thing instance I saw of it. Just, it's not like on Bandcamp or anything, but maybe it'll show. Maybe it'll show up. I'm going to look for it. Oh, actually, no, I've already found it. I found it on YouTube, so I'm going to post it in my club.
That works.
Yeah. Probably coincide with this podcast release, so look forward to it.
And what club is that on Facebook that you like?
It's called Hidden Sound Test Obscure Video Game Music? I don't know. I only built the club. It's only the most popular thing on Facebook. Yeah, it's just called Hidden Sound Test Obscure Video Game Music. You know, go join. It's just people posting obscure music via Facebook or Bandcamp all day, every day. We don't do anything else. We don't allow people to do anything else.
Yeah, no discussion, no stupid, just post music. Obscure music.
If you want to discuss something, just make sure there's music in the post.
Yeah,
or it'll delete it.
So. Sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you so much for covering these games. I know you're going to be back on eventually. I don't know how soon, because I know your next task is a biggie.
Oh, yeah. Well, that one is going to be pretty big. But I also have that that Chemco game you just sent me.
Indeed. But I'm thinking RPG Maker. I'm very excited to see what you can do with that.
I'm excited too. I've been messing around with it, so I'm gonna get serious about it and start building some stuff.
Sounds good. Definitely keep me updated. And do you have any final words to end this episode?
Yeah.